Hello! Welcome! Welcome to Movie Banter...
Episode 3,
Movie Banter with a Vengeance.
Vengeance? Really? Or against who?
Well, against the movie world.
Ah, fair enough.
Yeah, this will show them. They're all listening.
For taking so much of your time this weekend.
Exactly. Our theme should be, I will talk and Hollywood will listen, because that's what they are, listening, right now.
Really?
Along with the nine others. Thanks for listening, nine others.
No, we're up to about 25.
25, yeah.
Which I think includes me and you.
Probably, yes.
And at least one of our friends.
Yes.
But that's still 20 plus.
That's all right. I know my agent listens.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay, well, he listened anyway once.
Okay.
In fact, he was saying, in our response to last week, to asking if we should have an intro theme.
Oh, yes.
And he said we need the Pearl and Dean theme, though I think that's probably copyrighted.
Probably is copyrighted.
So we can...
just steal it.
Just, yeah.
Be fine,
or,
I'm sure.
Or just sing Pearl and Dean to a different tune. You know?
I'd rather not.
Let's not do that.
Possibly not.
Let's not do that.
I actually referenced last week, also to our dozens or tens of listeners, I also need to apologise, despite the fact that no one emailed to complain, that I mentioned The Wrestler being directed by David Fincher, and it's not, it's Darren Aronofsky.
Ah.
And David Fincher is doing The Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
Hang your head in shame.
I will. And I didn't even need to look that up. I was just suddenly, it suddenly occurred to me, and I suddenly thought, hang on, who directed? Yes, so I was entirely right. Are you now going to look that up and check?
No, we have had a letter.
Oh,
we've had an email.
We've been inundated with a letter.
We've been inundated with an email, so I'm going to put it on the big screen so we can actually see what it says.
You say the big screen as if we've got some massive projector.
Read it now.
It's like an auto cue, but it's just a laptop. This is an email from Barnaby in Leeds, who I do know. But still, thanks for emailing Barnaby. I'm going to pretend I don't know you. Barnaby writes, 'Tis a fine listen, Podmen. I concur that Quantum of Solace was a mediocre letdown. Ha ha ha. Born, in inverted commas, spelt born like... supremacy.
That works well when read out.
It does, doesn't it? Of contemporary cinematic efforts to make all action movies dark and or gritty, read containing scrappy close proximity bitch fights in badly decorated small rooms. At the expense of coherence, it seems. It seems. Yeah. There you go. Oh. That's more like it. Yes, it's great to hear a podcast chat from you. Your melodious voice and eloquent disdain lulled me into a state of mild rage, and I'm off to stab someone with a teaspoon, obviously at close quarters, and ideally in a dilapidated but exotic building. See you in court. So thanks, Barnaby,
yes,
from Leeds, for his comments there on my hatred of Quantum of Solace.
Well, yeah, and despite the fact that he seems to dislike the general born look of things, he then says he's going to go and enact it out.
Yeah, probably doesn't want to.
He's clearly a weak-willed man. He's just swayed by whatever he happens to see on screen.
As are the Bond going public, clearly, if they think that it's any good.
There is a difference. I'm not saying it's a great, great film. There is a world of grey in between awesome and terrible.
Yeah, and it just looks grey. That's the problem.
It just looks grey.
It does. It looks bleak and horrible. I don't like it. Anyway, moving on from Quantum of Solace, if we can. I should, for a start, our credentials in being here.
Very true. Yeah.
Oh, I haven't said hello. I'm Paul Carenza, by the way.
Yes,
hello.
I'm John Sands. Hello. I think we assume if you got as far as episode 3, frankly, you must be very keen.
We should introduce ourselves, really, though.
At the same time, hopefully, we're pulling in a few more people each time.
Of course.
Our subscriber numbers seem to be going up, albeit from low numbers to slightly less low numbers, but still, it's no bad thing.
It's somewhere, isn't it?
It is, it's somewhere. And this may be the first new one that's on iTunes.
Could be.
Possibly.
Ooh, now we're into the new technological age.
Yes, we've entered the 20th... Oh, no, I was going to say 20th century, but... No, it is actually 21st.
We're about 100 years later.
I think the iPod was 2001 first
could
came
be,
out. So,
could be.
Yeah, that's
we're
the,
there,
yeah.
We're there. So you might have found us through moviemistakes.com,
or the movietimeline.com, which Paul runs.
That's correct. Which leads me on to In This Week in Cinema History. It's now late November, and so I can tell you that on November 25th, 1976, Rocky Balboa, how do we pronounce it?
Balboa. It's written right there.
Isn't there a country called Bilbao, though, isn't it?
Yeah, Bilbao is a country.
But that's spelled entirely differently. Just joking.
And there was never a boxing movie made about Bilbao.
Well, in this week, in movie history, in 1976, Rocky, whatever his name is...
Balboa.
knocked out Apollo Creed in the 15th round in their rematch. That's nice to know. A year before that, he went ice skating on his first date with Adrian. That's quite nice, isn't it? Yeah.
Why do they specify... I can understand the date of the boxing match being specified in the film.
Oh, it's a key moment, the ice skating scene.
Really?
Oh, it's absolutely key.
I'm not entirely up to speed with the Rocky films.
Neither am I, to be honest. Is it not about ice skating?
Rocky, it's light on ice skating. It's heavier on boxing than it is on ice skating.
Well, when I just said a minute ago that Rocky knocks out Apollo Creed in the 50, I presume that was on ice skating, is that not?
I was saying, no, if you knock out your opponent in ice skating, that tends to be frowned on. Well, you can lose a good couple of points in the judges.
Right, fair enough.
Decapitating your opponent with an ice skate blade.
Torville versus Dean.
I pay to see that.
Exactly, I pay for that.
Is it boxing or ice skating? Or both?
Boxing
on ice skates.
Boxing on ice. The new Saturday night, Boxing on Ice with the Stars.
London 2012, absolutely. Boxing on Ice, that's what we need.
Watch this space, coming soon. also this week, November 26th, 1911, according to the film world, the New York Herald reported that Joseph Green, Stanley Berry and Daniel Hill murdered a man in Green Berry Hill.
Weirdly, you can finish that. From Magnolia.
From Magnolia, yes.
Sorry, because I was just thinking, hang on, how does that tie into Magnolia? And then I realised about coincidences and similar thing. Very bizarrely, in a bizarre coincidence of all things, I'm currently rereading, you know, The Air Affair, which you're reading.
Yes, Jasper Ford.
Yes, really good book, slightly bonkers, but it's a series of several. And I read The Air Affair again recently, and I've now moved on to the second one, which is called Lost in a Good Book, and there are a few references to coincidences in that, and a few of the chapters start by talking about coincidences, famous coincidences in history, and I assumed they were just made up ones. For the book.
Yes.
But one of the ones that's mentioned is that.
Well, there you go.
Must be true. And it's a coincidence.
What a coincidence.
That's slightly freaky.
Oh, that's quite a coincidence, actually.
Because I did say earlier on we probably shouldn't specifically check the date we record this, because why bother? But now it's also relevant.
The 26th is today.
Exactly. And that's a coincidence that I read it sort of late last night, but it was technically today.
That's amazing.
It's a weird coincidence.
And I passed a shop today called Coincidence.
Really?
Big sign outside saying Coincidence. Yeah. Coincidence?
It was.
No, made it up. anyway, but this is movie banter.
Slightly too long.
We should talk about some movies. Now, I've seen lots of movies this week.
Because I have not.
Well, I hadn't really last week, so I was playing catch up. I think I've probably achieved the record, I think, for cinema film seen in a weekend this weekend. Just this weekend. Not ever.
That is probably true. I think even committed film reviewers probably haven't seen as many.
Eight films this weekend.
Which is good going.
It's not bad, is it?
And also, that's more films than I've seen in the cinema in the last couple of weeks.
It's more than most have seen in a year, probably. But
that's true of some people.
See, I was in Leeds, so I was bored. What else is there to do? No, there's lots of lovely things to do there, but it was cold, and near Leeds, there's a wonderful place called Castleford, which is bleak and rubbish, and all the locals go, why would you ever want to go there? But whenever I go to Leeds, always go to Castleford, because they've got a Cineworld, they've got a Harvester, and they've got a half-price retail outlet. So this weekend,
what more could any man?
Exactly. I've done all my Christmas shopping. I've had something from the salad cart.
Half price, and you're now telling them. Sorry,
they won't know. They don't listen. I've had a salad cart buffet thingy, and my choice, the eight most favourite films to watch of the eight films.
The eight films are available.
So
did you actually go and see every single film?
Most of them. They had about 12.
Did you avoid? Actually. You probably didn't see High School Musical 3.
I didn't see High School Musical 3. That is still on. In a digital presentation, no.
Oh, really? Digital is worth seeing.
But I couldn't be bothered. I had eight other better films to see.
Digital, it's all well and good, but I wouldn't go out of your way for it.
So, exactly. So, over the next half hour, I'm going to be attempting to crowbar in reviews for Quarantine, Blindness, Body of Lies, Pride and Glory, Zack and Mary Make a Porno, Choke, Daywatch, and Waltz with Bashir, and Ghost Town. Ghost Town, because we did that before, so I can just say I've seen it now and I agree with you.
You enjoyed it, yeah.
It was good. It was. Although one slight, this may be of interest to you as a mistake spotter.
No, very true.
Was that this? If you haven't seen Ghost Town, Ricky Gervais, dentist, dies a bit, and then can see ghosts. And all these ghosts, in theory, have either unfinished business or there's that sort of thing.
And that sixth sense, but a bit less.
Cool. Exactly. And yet, they all latch on to Ricky Gervais's character, saying, "Oh wow, you can. You know, we can't interact with the real world. Yeah. You can." You can do all our unfinished business for us.
Yes.
That's generally the plot, isn't it? But if he hadn't come along, then what's the point of them being left around with unfinished business, given that none of them can actually
do it? They never really deal with the idea of any sort of higher power existing who's put them in this position.
Exactly.
It's just, unless there's some higher power involved saying, no, I'm going to make you a ghost, and there's nothing you're ever going to be able to do about it. Ah, ha, ha, ha.
If Richard Gervais hadn't died a bit, then they would have just been all stuck there walking around going, oh, I must tell that person how I really feel about her or where the teddy bear is or whatever.
Yeah,
and actually,
there's nothing
they can do
about
it.
Mind you, isn't the same true of The Sixth Sense?
Probably.
Can anyone else, is it in The Sixth Sense, can anyone else see dead people?
I don't know, actually. Maybe there's Ricky Gervais's little bit part in the background.
That's very true. Maybe there's two overlapping stories.
I think so.
Is Sixth Sense in New York?
I can't don't think it is.
Pity.
Philadelphia's screaming out at me for some reason, but I don't quite know why.
Pity, it'd be great if they did. Just two overlapping stories, and somehow, the small boy who sees terrifying dead people gets a far worse deal than Ricky Gervais, who sees the nice, happy friends evidence of how they died.
Crazy
whatsoever.
Comedy dead people. So anyway, Ghost Town, that was going to be my quick review. Yes, so that's taken 5 minutes. I agree. It was good fun if you like Ricky Gervais.
Yes.
So shall I march on with the first?
I think you should, because my cinematic.
Well, just chirp in occasionally if you've got any thoughts on any of these things.
Please, of course.
So you should just make up an opinion.
I will.
You've seen it.
I've heard of them all except Blindness, which I can't.
Let's start with this then, because I thought I'd do it in pairs, because I do find that they pair up quite nicely. Because firstly, we've got Epidemics,
right?
Which is a new niche genre in cinema.
It's like a disaster movie, but
exactly.
More focused.
It's an epidemic movie, and this is so Blindness and Quarantine. I want to talk about first because Quarantine. Let's look at that first of all, because this is a remake of the Spanish film Wreck.
I didn't know that. I saw the trailer for that, which was quite frightening.
Wreck, which is spelt open square brackets REC capitals, then the red dot you get on your record on your video player,
right.
Closed square brackets. Which I kind of like as a title, because it forces anyone who's actually going to try and write the proper title to try and find this button on their keyboard, which doesn't even exist.
Yeah. Well, fortunately, no one submitted any mistakes for it, I think, because any new film that comes out, I have to put into my database, and if they've got a weird title, it's a pain.
Exactly. Well, that's going to be one of them.
Yeah, as soon as someone submits that, I'll just put it in as Wreck.
I'll save myself the hassle. Yeah, save yourself the hassle, I think. But I haven't seen Wreck, actually. I've seen Quarantine, and it does strike me as one of these, it's a good film. The idea is... That there's a camera crew who are following a fire brigade around for the night. Fire brigade are called out to a building where there's some sort of screams of some sort, and they go in there. It turns out it's this this epidemic, which basically makes people kind of like a zombie,
right?
Sort of aggressive, rabies, that sort of thing. Mm. Then the whole building is shut down with everybody in it. People on the outside are saying, "We'll let you out at some point soon," and then they find out from the news that actually. The people outside are saying that everyone's been let out and evacuated. So they're suddenly going, they're not going to let us out, are they?
Yeah.
And hilarity doesn't ensue from there.
Doesn't ensue on any level whatsoever.
But it's a good film. It's a tense film, I found. And actually, I found it, if you compare that with Blindness, for example, if you compare it with any zombie film, because it is basically a zombie film, even though they're not quite zombies.
Are they the sort of fast-moving type, or are they sort of
fast-moving,
slow, lumbering?
Because they're not dead, that's the thing. And what I did quite like about it was the realistic angle, because I could almost see it, they're basically saying this is a strain of rabies, and whether or not it exists or not, rabies, exist.
So you can scale it up from reality.
You can scale it up from there. So I found it, in that sense, better than a lot of horror films, in that I could believe it a lot more.
Yes.
It did probably go. It was a bit much at some points, but then for a film that's basically a zombie horror film, for me to go, it's a bit much. That's probably the going. Well, great. That's what we wanted. It's meant to be.
It should have been even too much. Is what you wanted.
And I mean, it's got some lovely comedy moments of anytime you see a zombie movie, they're trying to kill a zombie, hitting it too many times in the face with something hard is always funny. So it's got a bit of that going on.
They use a frying pan?
No frying pan. Fire extinguisher.
Okay. Good chunking noise.
Just to the head about 10, 15 times, which is... it's always fun.
Yeah.
So it's got that going on for it. I think... this is my big problem with it. I was liking it most of the way through. Towards the end, as I say, went off a little bit. I thought, it's a bit too... Not tense anymore. It's not not the thriller I liked it to be. It's now more just out-and-out horror and gore and stuff.
Yeah.
But the cardinal sin it did for me, which lost it a good couple of points for me, was the fact that the final shot, which in a horror film is very important, because it's normally the big... nowadays, it's the big scare. It's, other films, you get the sort of the epilogue, the come down.
Yes.
Horror films, normally, it's the big scare.
Final scare.
Which you do
possible
have.
Possible sequel setup.
There is a big scare at the final moment, except... It's in the trailer. It's not only in the trailer, it's on the poster.
Right.
It's just... And so I knew it was coming. I was thinking, we haven't had that bit yet. It's in the trailer, it's in the poster, it's a familiar image.
Yeah.
And so the big, big tense build-up for the last 30 seconds or minute or so, I'm there going, well, it's not tense, because I know exactly what the last shot is going to be. And sure enough, there's the last shot, credits roll, and I'm not impressed.
It leaves on a downer.
That is a real, real no-no for me.
People should never put shots in trailers that are important to the film, or plot points in trailers that are important to the film.
I like a trailer that only has stuff from the first about 15 minutes of the film. That's
what true. Well, even with action films, all right, you can have explosions and
because
you can't really place them. And when you're seeing it in the film, you think, oh, that's where that comes in. But anything that's important is just it's wrong.
Yeah.
Flight plan is the most slightly off topic, but flight plan is the most irritating one of that for me, because in the whole the trailer, they point out very quickly, if Jodie Foster possibly loses a child on a plane, and then turns out, in the trailer we find out she hasn't lost a child, she's not insane, people are trying to make her think she is insane, and it's all part of a big plot. So that's the film. But then in the actual film itself, they spend a good half hour covering, has she lost this child? Is she really insane? What does everyone think? And we're sitting there thinking, well, we know she's not insane. Yeah. You're just wasting our time now.
Yeah, exactly.
You're trying to make us invest in something that we know not to be true, so why bother? Anyway, that was so similar.
Yes, no, exactly. Fair point. So, but Blindness, I suppose, is the other extreme, which is something that you haven't... Have you heard of
no,
it?
No, I don't think I've heard of it.
It's a very interesting film. And I didn't quite know what to make of it. It's a very daring film, but as the word daring implies, there's a dare involved, and sometimes if you dare, sometimes you succeed, sometimes you don't. And this one is a bit on the fence, I think.
Okay.
So I'm a bit unsure. The plot of it is... that there is, again, an epidemic. In this case, it's a blindness epidemic that suddenly a guy just goes blind, just this sort of white blindness, stuck in traffic. And this spreads, and more and more people get this. And the government, no one knows how to stop this. Experts don't have a clue. So what they do is they actually put these blind people, the newly blind of this particular epidemic, into a centre and just let them get on with it and just say, you know, we're going to barricade you away. That's it.
Nice.
So it starts off kind of like, okay, well, maybe some medical help will come or something, and then they realise that more and more people are coming in, they've run out of beds, they've run out of food, and it's modern-day concentration camp sort of territory. And the twist of it is that Julianne Moore, she follows her husband in, her husband's gone blind. She, for some reason, hasn't gone blind.
Right.
But to be with him, she pretends that she is.
Okay.
So she's the one person in this centre who can see, no one else can.
Right.
And what the film's really about is the breakdown of society. It's meant to be... I think the filmmakers have said that it's meant to be about how this little thing... you change one small aspect and society just crumbles.
Yeah.
Because in this centre, very quickly when they start running out of food, there's one guy played by Gael Garcia... can't remember his surname. But a Spanish actor from... really, really good actor. And a very bold role for him to play because it's... He's horrible. He's a monster in this. You know, to start off with...
Always makes a good viewing, I find.
Well, he takes in the food, and then he's sort of saying, you give me your valuables for... If you want some food, you want to eat, you give me your valuables. Very quickly, that becomes, give us your women. And that actually makes probably one of the most harrowing scenes I've seen in recent film when, you know, the women go to, this sort of evil gang. And, you know, everyone's blind, and it's... they're bumping into each other. It's not hilarious, is it? Yes. Clearly could sound, but it's not. It's horrible, really. This has really divided people. A lot of disabled charities and support groups are saying this is wrong because you are depicting someone who's blind as morally bankrupt, and you're using blindness in a way that you really shouldn't. And I can see their point.
But surely not everyone in the film who is blind is morally bankrupt. There's just... I mean, because if it's meant to be society breaking down, surely in this centre, everyone in it is blind, but they're also sort of a sample of the population. So you've essentially got a fair measure of the population contained in one group, and everyone is now blind in that group. But within any group, you're going to get some good people and some bad people.
Exactly. Well, in this situation,
that doesn't relate to blindness makes you evil.
But in this one, pretty much, when people lose their sight, it's not long before they lose everything else.
Oh, I see.
And in this one, I mean, for example, you've got people in this centre, and, you know, to start with, it's quite nice, but before long, they can't find the toilet, and so they're just defecating the corridor, and fighting over food, and, you know, that sort of thing. And it breaks down pretty quickly.
Yes.
The thing is, though, from what I gather from the filmmakers and from the film itself, is that they are saying, look, in this film, blindness is a metaphor for
pretty much any given social ill.
Yeah, exactly. Or for something you can take away from someone and loses that sort of, side of them. So, that's the key word there, metaphor, I think.
Yes.
Which is that, and I can quite see why, if they made a film saying, the world's turning ginger. As soon as they turn ginger, society crumbles and we'll put them in a camp.
Yeah,
I'd be offended.
You'd be offended, though.
So I can quite see why blind people might have a problem with this film. But I think the key there is the word metaphor and the fact that they don't mean it to be about them, but obviously it's a very sensitive subject.
Yes.
And there's been uproar. I put it this way, they do some films with audio description for blind people. I'd imagine this is one they probably won't.
True.
The audio description's probably just going to be, it's offensive, it's still offensive.
Exactly, yes.
It's an hour and a half
more. You wouldn't like this.
Of offensiveness. But having said that, I found it an interesting film. And yeah. And yes, it was harrowing.
The two were not mutually exclusive.
No, and it was a tough watch, a very tough watch. But then, you know, to be fair, almost like Schindler's List sort of levels.
Yeah.
But an interesting and, you know, interesting take on.
Because well-made horribleness can make for a very good film. You just need to...
Yeah. Yeah, but as I say, I think it took a dare, took a gamble. It's a bit like, you know, Russell Brand, Jonathan Ross sort of thing. You dare down a particular route, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And this one's sort of on the fence, I think.
That sounds intriguing.
So there you go. That's Blindness. Shall we move on to the next couple?
I think so.
Let's talk about Zach and Miri.
Fair enough.
And Choke, because this is lighter yes. fare.
No, very true. So annoyingly, Zach and Miri, I was very keen to see, and. Very few people have been around, and I never go to the cinema by myself for no good reason.
I only go on myself.
I know that's it's a habit you've got into, and I have yet to, because both three in the middle of the day. But if you're back home, you don't go to the cinema.
No, I wouldn't back home.
Yes,
but I've got work to do.
Well, you know.
I've got podcasts about films I've watched on my own to talk about.
Yes. See, I have work to do, but I can do it in the middle of the night. So there's no reason I couldn't go to the cinema in the afternoon.
Very
but
true.
I just never do. So as a result, I miss Zach and Miri.
I have once been to a cinema. I think it was in. Oldham up near Manchester. Sort of like Tuesday morning, first film of the day. I went in there, just had a day to kill between gigs, and yeah, there was literally no other punters in.
Yeah,
and so the person on the desk yawning sort of said, which film do you want to see then? And I told him whatever it was, and he just yelled back to the projectionist, can you get number four going? Okay. So they clearly, you know, rather than you think that they've got a sort of all the ball rolling out all the time.
Yeah.
But on this occasion, they just thought, well, there's no one here.
Exactly. It's 11 a.m. Who goes to cinema at 11 a.m. on a Wednesday?
Exactly. I even, during the film just started, I thought, oh, I need to go for a wee. And I went, and they stopped it for me. It was so sweet. They Genius. Paused the film in the cinema. Wonderful. So this is my weekend in Leeds of seeing far too many films. So, Zach and Miri. Mm. This is Zach and Miri make a porno, or in some states of America they call it Zach and Miri, just to try and not put people off. Although, as soon as you go in, you'll walk out if you didn't know. If you thought this is a nice romantic film.
Was it someone saw it and they said... Oh, it doesn't matter. But yes, someone I was speaking to had seen it, and they just said it's basically just... It's not quite just porn, but it's filthier than you'd possibly expect.
Yeah, it's quite... As you'd expect, a film about making a porn film, there's sort of sex in it.
Yes.
Not sort of, you know, it's fake sex, I should point out. It's not sort of real. But
there's more, because it's a Kevin Smith film.
It's a Kevin Smith film.
Which isn't being advertised anywhere
at all.
I think it's probably an experiment by the studios, figuring that Kevin Smith fans will know it's a Kevin Smith film and go and see it. And people who aren't Kevin Smith fans, who may have thought, I don't like Kevin Smith films, might go and see this without realising.
The weird thing is, because Kevin Smith, if you don't know, he did Clerks, Mallrats, Chasing Amy,
Dogma,
all these sort of things, which I suppose were quite, I don't know how you describe it, sort of kind of nerdy geek fests in a way, really. A lot of Star Wars references, comic book stuff.
Yes, but also fun, a lot of swearing.
A lot of plain speaking, yeah. But kind of, you know, films with funny characters, interesting sequences.
Yeah.
But not, you know, it was set in what he called the Viewersk universe, which is...
It's basically an interconnected group of people, really. Yeah. Lots of the same people were referenced in each film, and they all sort of knew each other. But none of the film, except for Clerks and Clerks 2, none of the films were directly connected to each other.
Yeah.
But they all sort of featured the same kind of people.
But also, none of them really had the sort of a conventional plot that you'd have in a normal film. They did have plots
more,
of their own kind.
It was more
kind
of slice, I don't want to say slice of life, but for the sake of life,
sort of
it was that.
Slacker comedy in a way. Yeah. Sort of thing. But they, I really enjoyed them. I thought they were really good fun. And then he did Jersey Girl, which was critically panned, but I think I was the guy who liked it.
Yeah, no, likewise.
You know, I thought it was
again, I think because people were expecting another Kevin Smith film.
Probably so.
And it's not really that sort of film.
And Jersey Girl is much more conventional. It's Ben Affleck, and it's a sweet romantic comedy, I thought.
Yes. I think he described it, he described it as a love story or a romantic comedy between a man and his daughter.
Yeah, it's very sweet and affecting. It's very nice. Zach and Miri, I feel, falls in between the two camps a bit.
Right.
And it can't decide which one it wants to be, because it's got the romantic sort of subplot, but also quite a bit of the more sex-based kind
Clerks
of 2
humor. Was similar to that as well, because Clerks 2 had far more of a romantic comedy
but equally, I found Clerks 2 didn't work like... Zach and Miri equally.
True.
But I think Zach and Miri is, unfortunately, Kevin Smith's probably his worst film,
oh, really?
I thought. It just... It was. I mean, I laughed about four times, probably.
Not a good sign.
But I just found it was a little bit too... I would... Here's what I'd like to do. I'd like to have all directors and writers are forced to make three films in a row without swear words.
Right.
Because I'm no prude. I like a swear as much as the next man. But I feel like in this film particularly, he falls back on it quite a lot. Right. As that's a way to end a scene. That's a way to... We'll get a laugh from this. And I was in a cinema where they, no one really laughed.
Yeah.
I was the only one there. But still, no one else really laughed. I just think he... And I know he's capable of better.
Yes.
I know that he could have made it funnier. But I think he probably got a bit bogged down with this romantic subplot as well, and trying to get that going through. A lot of the critics as well seem to be saying it's unbelievable because Zach and Miri, you know, they're two best friends who run out of money and they decide to make a porn film to try and sell it and, you know, pay the rent. And in the process,
fall for each other.
Yeah. They've known each other for 10 years, and the critics say, "But she's far too beautiful. Why has this never come up before? And why have they never?" But I think that. We prove this rule, I think, quite well, because we have female friends.
Oh, see, I thought you said,
not us.
Because we've known each other for 10 years.
We've never slept together. Exactly. but we've got female friends who they're hot, I think it's fair to
very
say.
True. Oh, yeah, they frankly outrank us. Quite
exactly.
Nicely.
Exactly.
Yeah, but,
again, like one of whom I live with, just like
very
in the
true.
Film, you know.
Yeah, but.
We've never felt we had to make a porn film or have sex, you know.
Oh, I see. Sorry. So your point, yeah, but surely the point is that if this has, between these two friends, if it has come up now, why has it not come up before?
True.
The prospect of anything happening between any of us and our female friend, I think, is never going to happen. It's not
well,
like it's suddenly...
Never say never.
Well, you're getting married, and like, if you're
well,
running out of time, frankly.
Very true, but next pub night, I'm going to say we should make a porn film. All of us, come on. No, I won't.
I'd like to see the reaction.
But no, anyway.
I'm just trying to work out who would be up for them. I can say the first day,
I'm casting it in my head right now.
We're now both sides.
I think the point stands. What I was saying was that I think
it's perfectly possible for mismatched in terms for two people of the opposite gender who are mismatched in attractiveness to be friends, and then at least in film world things can then suddenly develop. Especially
exactly.
If you suddenly
it does happen in the real world. I'm pretty sure.
Really,
anyway.
I can think of no two friends who have ever fallen for each other. In reality,
they are, if you're listening and this has happened to you, email them.
Please do, or anyone you know, or anyone you've ever even heard of who's real.
Friends, you've got to be friends for 10 years, and then
sorry, 10 years.
Well, okay,
but friends for a long time,
friends for a while, and then get together. That's what I want to know. But it does. I'm sure it happens. I'm sure you hear about it.
Actually, having said that, Kat and Arthur weren't they sort of friends?
There you go.
This is one of Paul's housemates who got together. I think they're friends.
Probably.
That's maybe. All right, but we're looking for a definite concrete example.
Anyway, Zach and Miri. So, all right, quite amusing, but a little bit too gross
not,
out,
not
I think, at
point.
But yeah, I wanted to couple this with a quick mention of the film Choke, which is a Sam Rockwell film.
Yes.
And who's brilliant. I think he's an Oscar waiting to happen.
He is.
He's so watchable.
Well, not even underrated, because I think he's quite well-rated. But he doesn't quite get the admiration he deserves.
I think he picks films which aren't Oscar fair, generally. But I think if he did and he found the right one, I think he's the best actor waiting to happen, really. Choke is it's based on a book by Chuck Palahniuk, who's the guy who wrote Fight Club. So it's that sort of tone. It's a very offbeat comedy, and I much preferred it to Zach and Miri because it's the offbeat nature, and Zach and Miri was a bit too out there. Choke is a very odd plot to even attempt to describe.
Right.
But it all sort of works because of its offbeat nature. I mean, Sam Rockwell plays this guy who goes to sex addiction meetings. So there's a Fight Club sort of crossover there about this sort of support group thing. He goes to those, but, you know, every single meeting ends up just banging a girl in the back room. And clearly, you know, it's not what kind of working since, hi, my name is Jeff, and it's been 6 months in my last time. No, it hasn't. So he does that in his day job as well. He works in a sort of a medieval... a holiday theme park where you don't see any customers, you just see the people working there, which is kind of nice. They've got their own little society, lots of forsooths and verilies, you know, but in day-to-day chat it's quite nice. And he's got the issue that his mum's in a home for the mentally ill. There's a lot of scenes or slight attempts at humour involving mentally ill people, which I think it's sort of just about sensitively enough done, I think.
Right.
But I'm not sure. So again, it's approach with caution with that one, but it has got some very funny scenes. There's a laugh out loud scene I saw, which again sounds very wrong.
which but almost certainly means it is very wrong.
It's there's a woman who has a fantasy about being assaulted in her own home, and so gets Sam picks up Sam Rockwell up in a bar and says, "Will you do this?" And he agrees to it. A very, very funny scene of them in the house with her trying to be surprised by this assaulter. But then also saying no, not on the rug. No, that's new. Not there. No, just tear this. Not that. That's silk. No. And it's very funny. But it's that side of that sort of side of the line, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just found the two films, Choke and Zack and Miri, quite similar in that both have a lot of sex in it. And jokes about sex. But I think Choke sort of got it right because it's more about the characters.
I think Choke's more unapologetic about it. He doesn't try and attach a romantic angle to it. It's more just.
Exactly,
bankrupt character,
and it's one of those. If you like Fight Club, I think you'll like this. So I'd recommend it.
Okay,
good.
From the sound of all from the trailer, anyway, it looked a little tenuously like Californication. It is just a character with not even no morals, but just
pretty much no morals. Yeah,
well, yeah, but he's just sort of going through life trying to.
He breezes through. Yeah. I mean, it does get a little bit confused in its own plot towards the end, I think, but it's. Yeah, it's a good film. I enjoyed that.
Cool.
Probably my highlight of the week. I think I might leave some of the others for next week because we've got far too many here. But I will just say as well, I saw Body of Lies and Pride and Glory. Again, both good films. Both, again, I sort of would couple up together because they're both about peacekeepers who are sort of it's not good and bad. There's a big area of grey, like Quantum of Solace. I think both were entertaining watches, but both have everyone involved has done better, I think.
Right.
So I ended up thinking, why watch this when you can watch Heat?
No, really. Very true. Well, I have heard about Body of Lies saying it's not as good as you think it should be.
Yeah, exactly.
With the people involved, it's Ridley Scott or Tony Scott?
Body of Lies is Ridley Scott and Russell Crowe and Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah, so you'd think it could be an amazing film.
But exactly, they've all done better, really. You know, if you like, any of that, it's set in the Middle East. It's sort of set in very much modern-day Iraq. But it's quite Bond, quite 24, but it tries to be a bit, I suppose, a bit gritty, a bit more of a grey area between the good and the bad guys. An interesting watch, but you come away thinking, well, it wasn't that long since Ridley Scott's last film, and not that long before the one before that. Can he not space them out a bit and do a bit more?
Yeah.
Just make him a bit more gritty. It's not a masterpiece. It could have been a masterpiece,
yes.
And it's not.
It's a bit more by numbers.
So that's the slight frustration. And Pride and Glory as well. This is a film.
Colin
it's about
Farrell
Colin Farrell and Edward Norton yes. And Noah Emmerich and John Voight. And again, all these people, they're very good in it, but you think, well, if you want to see an Edward Norton film, American History X, if you want to go and see John Voight, Anaconda 2, they've all done better films.
Anaconda 2? No, he wasn't in Anaconda 2. Didn't he die in Anaconda?
Well, exactly. He was better in that. So I think...
Colin Farrell in Bruges.
Colin Farrell in Bruges, absolutely. Very good.
Probably others, but in Bruges, certainly.
And Noah Emmerich, incidentally, he's the guy who plays Jim Carrey's best friend in The Truman Show. Brilliant in that, Brilliant in that. But and in Pride and Glory, it's an all right film. Actually, the last half hour I thought was really, really good. But there's a good 2 hours of tosh before that where it just takes a while to get going. But if you want, again, if you want to see a good cop film about guys on the sides of good and evil... Heat, I think, is much,
true.
Much better. So just
Which
watch
is,
that.
It's a sad state of affairs that nothing has come along better, really, in 13 years.
13 years, yeah.
But, mind you, with the calibre of people involved, it's various people at their peak.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Times to come.
It is a winner. So, yes, I think we should move on now to our Desert Island Flicks.
Very true. It was an idea suggested by you.
It's a new feature.
Which
I'm sure has never ever been thought of before. Yeah. Desert Island Flicks. Do you see what we did there? Discs and flicks.
Except
anyway,
Desert Island Discs may not be known to our overseas cousins.
Fair point.
Which is the basic idea. It's a film. If you had to take one film with you onto Desert Island, what would it be? And we thought rather than just having one film and then we're done, so narrow it down by genre or by specific actor or to a specific director or involving certain words. We'll just see how it goes, really.
So this week, what are we doing this week?
This week, I thought action.
Action.
We're going to alternate, because the trouble is I'm rubbish at thinking up films on the spur of the moment, but you aren't. You said you revel in the challenge.
Well, I like a challenge.
Exactly. So I thought action.
Okay.
And you've had about 14 seconds to think about it.
Okay. If I had to take any action film to a desert island, one ever, I think it's got to be Die Hard.
You see, that was going
to
be my thinking
got
as well.
Got to be Die Hard.
Yeah, which is for...
So you've got to think of another one now.
Well, no, because the whole point is that we... Well, I suppose I could try and think of another one. But no, because I was going Die Hard as well. Not, I mean, because there are probably... I'd miss other action films, certainly. But there are certain films that when a genre gets mentioned, your brain goes straight there. And possibly just because of the era of it, because we kind of grew up with Die Hard in our brains. But yeah, you can't really fault it.
It's so watchable whenever it comes on TV.
Yeah,
whatever point it is when you watch it on TV, and you just have to watch the end of it. You have to keep on watching.
In fact, even when it was on TV, I think it was a year or so ago on ITV over here. They ran a trailer for it for it being on that Saturday, I think, and they ran a trailer for it in reverse, just saying Die Hard. You know it backwards, but it's still great. You'll watch
exactly.
it, and it was true because it's always watchable. And every year, I get together with a couple of my friends and watch it. Just because they're Christmas obsessed,
yeah,
and it's a very Christmassy film.
It's
in
a very Christmassy
weird
film.
Sort of way.
I think that's another thing we should do in future weeks as well. Over the coming few weeks is Christmas films because I'm a big Christmas fan. I'm loving a bit of Christmas, and yeah, so there's some fine Christmas movies out there, but there's also lots of rubbish.
That is very true.
So we shall help you.
It's
forage.
A very easy genre just to trot out any old task.
It is,
and knowing that people go.
Sure enough, I've seen the trailers already.
Yes, four Christmases for example.
Exactly.
So Roger Ebert reviewed it today. And his review pretty much just consisted of a fictional chat between the makers and the director and the studio, just saying, "I've got an idea for Christmas. It's going to have Vince Vaughn in it and Reese Witherspoon." Said, "All right, who else is in it? We're going to have him and his dad. Why? Well, because people know who he is, right? And him and his mum, because people fancy her. Oh, okay, fair enough. We're going to have him and his best mate. Yeah, that works. And that's pretty much all there is to it."
Do I presume that Roger Ebert did not give it one star per Christmas? Then
I think he gave it 1.5 or 2 stars out of
right.
4.
Okay,
which means. Possibly adequate.
I do.
But it's not.
If you've seen the poster for it, Vince Vaughn looks in pain. His face looks, you know, like he's trying to do a smile, and they go,
yeah, just
"Look like you're enjoying yourself, Vince.
Think of the money."
Reese Witherspoon is, you know, she clearly
well, she's a very good actress,
able
but
to fake that a long time ago.
Yes,
but,
I think she's happier in this sort of in that sort
so.
Of genre. But yeah, Vince Vaughn. I don't know what the content is, but I'd imagine Vince Vaughn probably wants there to be more swearing than there is in it.
I can imagine that's probably right. There probably was more on set than he thought, particularly at the scriptwriters.
Yes.
So anyway, we'll do in future weeks some Christmas movies. But yes, for now, our Desert Island flick for this week, action movies, Die Hard.
And why not? Because you'd be hard pushed to find better.
Absolutely.
I think.
Yeah.
What was the other thing? There was something else. Two random facts I found out this week.
Yes.
One of them is that neighbours of my parents are very good friends with Terry Gilliam.
Nice.
The
Gilliams.
Yeah.
Nice.
To the extent they went and had lunch with them on Sunday.
Cool.
Which is bizarre. Had I known that, I would have got my parents to ask them various questions.
Absolutely. We could do an interview by proxy.
Yeah.
Just, you know, pass it on a bit.
Like 6 degrees of separation, but do an interview to
sort
that
of
extent.
Chinese whispers. You know, be getting different answers to different questions, but it'd be all right.
Oh, it could work.
It would count.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other random fact, which is slightly bizarre, is that Twilight opened in America this week, which is a sort of teenage girl fantasy vampire film. Which is apparently good, but it's being compared to Harry Potter, but slightly less popular. Not in a bad way, because that still means it's phenomenally popular, but it's got more limited appeal to, apparently, teenage girls and their mothers.
Right.
Rather than Harry Potter, which is slightly broader.
Yes.
But the director of that is a woman, and the film has opened with $70-ish million in America at
That's
opening
enough.
Weekend, which is very good for a mainstream film. But what surprised me is that is the biggest opening weekend for a film directed by a woman. And the previous record holder was Deep Impact in 1998.
Wow.
And that just surprised me, because I thought, well, surely women direct films and direct big blockbuster films, but clearly not.
You don't see many of them, do you? When you get these sort of behind-the-scenes shows, it's normally beardy men. If women could grow beards, they'd be directing more films.
Well,
I think.
Guildford has a bearded lady.
We do.
Maybe she could go into the directing
Maybe
business.
She's a hotshot film director, and we
you
never
knew
it. Yeah.
I think there's two, in black and white terms, there's two arguments you can go. One is that films, big films, are too complicated for women to make, which I'm sure isn't the reason. And the other, equally sexist in the other direction, is that women are occupied with far bigger and important things than just making stupid films. I imagine the truth is probably nowhere near either of those. But there must be a reason, because it seems it's a bit too weird for there to be only two huge films in 10 years. Directed by women, and why don't women make more huge films?
I don't know. I can only presume that all these film directors who are clearly beaver away for years on a project that normally flops and earns them nothing, these people are supported by hard working women going out and having real
that's
jobs.
That's true, actually.
I can certainly vouch for that.
Slightly,
but yes.
So there's something else for people to email in if you're reeling off famous directorial women or explaining why it is that for some reason, yeah, I'm only pausing because I can't. I'm trying to work it out now, and I still can't.
Amy Heckerling, is that one of them? Have I heard of her?
I think that rings a bell. It's a name I've heard of. That could be anything. That's it. I mean, because women do direct films. Yes. I don't know if they seem to be more arty films.
Sofia Coppola.
Very true. Mm. But again, it's more arty, slightly. Maybe it's just I think it must just be that essentially the films that open hugely tend to be popcorn munching action.
Very
fests,
true. Yeah, that's the big.
Which stereotypically women are less interested in, and therefore women direct fewer of.
I saw that trailer. Why would they? I saw the trailer this week, Secret Life of Bees, which if that wasn't directed by a woman, I'll eat my hat.
Really?
But again, it'll do well among my mum will go and see it certainly.
No, fair enough.
It'll be the one film she sees this year.
No.
But it's not gonna sell hugely, I don't think, because it's not going to have an opening weekend that is going to be extraordinary. It's going to be a slow burner.
Well, the thing is, I don't know what the results are in terms of total box office gross, because this the stats I saw were only opening weekend, and so it seems to be, I think it's big action blockbusters that have big opening weekends, but then there could be films directed by women that have lower opening weekends but go on to do extremely well.
I'm sure so.
Further adding to the women are slightly more sensible.
Exactly,
men who just sort of rush out. Let's see something explode. Oh, I'm bored now.
Exactly.
Whereas women are slightly more long-term.
Look at the long game, you know. Us guys, I think, oh, glad to sit in the corner of a cinema right up the front so I can't even see the screen,
just so I can watch the explosion and then go home and do something else.
Exactly.
We're simple folk.
We are simple men, but yeah.
I think that's a lot.
Wonderful. Well, I think we've waffled on for far too long. Thank you for tuning in for Movie Podcast number 3. And we shall return with Movie Podcast...
Probably number 4.
Movie Banter podcast number 4.
In about a week.
I'll have to think of a title for it involving number 4. I reckon I can get to about 20.
We've been trying to think of subtitles for films. Or subtitles for the podcast. And thus far we're just going with episode 1, 2, 3. Which is vaguely Star Wars related, I suppose. We could try and think of film titles that relate to numbers of the podcast.
Next week, Movie Banter 4, A New Hope.
True.
Yeah.
That implies there'll be some sort of big change. And also that it'll be the best of the bunch.
Pressure's on.
No, not the best of the bunch, actually. The fifth one will be the best of the bunch.
Is that right?
But then it'll have to end on a bit of a down note.
I see. Okay.
Maybe the fifth one will be brilliant.
I don't think
we haven't
got to follow the plot of these films exactly.
No, we do. I've decided.
Is that right?
That's
okay.
Fair enough.
I'm
going to follow the plot of Star Wars exactly.
In which case, this one being Movie Banter 3, Movie Banter with a Vengeance.
You've got to cut my legs off and set fire to
me. I'm afraid so. I'm sorry.
I've not thought this through.
I've got to go for a drive around Central Park right now.
But I'll come back stronger than ever. Oh, that means the next one, I get to kill you.
Oh, do you? Oh, dear.
But then you'll still be there in spiritual form.
Well, there you are.
Yeah, we're stretching this a bit.
A little bit too much.
Anyway.
If you followed the last minute, then you're a better man than I.
Yeah, sorry.
Or woman, depending on your gender.
Well, I think any women are better women than you are.
Any women switched off a long time ago.
Yeah, that's true. Yes, because once again, they've done more sensible things than listening to us prattle.
Exactly. So we're going to end now. Thank you very much indeed. Do come back again next time for Movie Banter Podcast. Till then, farewell.
Farewell.